Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview was a real treat for me on a whole lot of levels, talking with Sam Pollard about his new film, Sammy Davis Jr., I've Gotta Be Me. What an insightful and entertaining documentary. As the TIFF's website says, a star-studded roster of interviewees, Jerry Lewis, Whoopi Goldberg, Billy Crystal, pay tribute to the legendary, multi-talented song and dance man. This is a film, as Sam says, about the greatest entertainer of the 20th century, a man who was complicated and friendly and political and controversial, a man who had great courage, who was complicated and difficult, as Sam said. He talks about Sammy Davis Jr. in a way that would suggest that he was a great observer, a great entertainer, and a great listener. We talk about race relations in the U.S. and we get into a whole lot of everything. You're going to enjoy the interview. You're going to love the film. Make sure you get out and see it. Its world premiere is happening at TIFF this season. Sammy Davis Jr., I've Gotta Be Me. Sam Pollard coming right up. DavidPeckLive.com. More information about my speaking, my writing. Also, face2facelive.ca for more information about other podcasts. We're going to be focusing on the Toronto International Film Festival this year and directors from all over the world. And don't forget rabble.ca as well for more thinking, reading, writing, and listening there for all things that matter. Sam Pollard coming right up. Sammy Davis Jr., I've Gotta Be Me. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today. I'm absolutely thrilled to have Sam Pollard, director and professor Sam Pollard, here with us today on the line, I think calling in from New York, but we're not quite sure. Sam, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me, David. And yes, you are calling me from New York City. You are calling me from New York. I'm in New York.
And are you going to be coming up to the festival?
I will be up at the festival for the opening premiere. I'll be at this September 11th through the 14th.
The 11th through the 14th, and premiering a film called Sammy Davis Jr., I've Gotta Be Me. My first words out of my mouth are congratulations. This is a remarkable film. It's highly entertaining. It's so much fun. It's so relevant to what's going on in the world today. I don't really know where to start, to be honest with you. There's so many ways we could come into this conversation. We could sort of start at the end. We've got so many remarkable guests that you've been able to bring into the conversation. Billy Crystal and Whoopi Goldberg. We've got an appearance from Michael Jackson near the end of the film. How do you put it into words when somebody says, so what's the film about other than Sammy Davis Jr.?
The way I would describe it, David, it's a film about one of the greatest entertainers of the 20th century. Sammy Davis Jr. was a singer, an impressionist, a dancer, an actor, a comic. He was a Renaissance man. He was phenomenal. He was a musician. He could play instruments. And so to me, it's about one of the great entertainers of the 20th century, Sammy Davis Jr., who was also a man of color, African-American man, who lived in a very complicated time during the years of Jim Crow, and how he struggled with that, and how he struggled with the issues of identity through his whole career and his life.
So you say it was a complicated time, Sam. I mean, are you talking specifically about race? Are you talking about politics? Are you talking about relationships overall? I mean, is it kind of more of a global thing, or was it very specific to the U.S.?
I think it's specific to the U.S. I think it's about race and it's about politics. You know, it's about a time in America where we had our own sort of apartheid. Well, we had our own apartheid in America. He was a man who could not go in the front door of certain clubs and restaurants in the 40s and 50s, and was beaten and heckled and painted and, you know, really treated atrociously as a young man. He was a man who wanted to entertain people and be a great entertainer and struggled with it. He was a man who sometimes wasn't quite sure where he stood as an African-American in this culture during the 60s, during the Civil Rights Movement, during the Black Power Movement. You know, he was a man who looked forward to sitting and sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom at the White House. You know, this was a struggle for him.
So a conflicted soul.
A conflicted soul, exactly. That's what he was. He's a very conflicted man, you know.
I love the way you open up the film with him saying, quote, "I'm colored, Jewish, and Puerto Rican." He refers to himself, I believe, as a one-eyed Negro Jew in the film. You bring that out in a couple of times in a few different places. So very intentional, clearly, on your part. Here's a guy who was clearly, working through some of his own personal issues, relational issues. He lived for the stage. In fact, I think somebody near the end of the film might have been even Harry Belafonte, who said he was only really himself when he was on stage.
Exactly. That's where he felt most comfortable. Here was a man who liked to go on stage. He could stay on the stage for an hour and a half, 2 hours just to perform. He was needy. He's an entertainer. Entertainers need, you know, they need the love of an audience. And he loved that. I mean, that's what he was all about. Think about it. Here was a man with his uncle and his dad. They were called the Will Maston Trio, who, when they got their big break at Ciro's, they were supposed to be the second act, the supporting act of Janis Paige. They come on the show. They don't do their regular set. Sammy goes all out. He does an hour set, you know, because he's so needy. He wants an audience to love him, and he could get an audience to love him. He was just such a phenomenal entertainer, but he was also a needy human being, you know, and the stage was his home.
So it's really interesting. I think it's an interesting metaphor for a whole lot of things, but I want to come back to that. What do you think, Sam, about the political power of celebrity? I mean, you've been working in film for years. You've a ton of work with Spike Lee. You worked on some brilliant films over the years. What about that? Was that part of the tension that he was feeling? Was that part of his issue that here he was in this time, as you say, this apartheid in the U.S.? Did he also feel a heavy responsibility as this man of influence who could actually change the conversation? I mean, he speaks so eloquently. He says, you know, at one point in the film, you bring it out quite clearly that he wasn't educated, and yet he comes across as this insightful, thoughtful, deeply intimate and relational guy who can also tap dance like nobody's business.
Yeah, but here's a man who understood. He didn't have education, but he was a reader. You know, he was a really observer and a listener. So he learned and he read. But think about it this way. When the 60s comes along and the Civil Rights Movement is at its peak, here's Sammy, who's also at his peak with the Rat Pack, with his movie career, with his singing career. And he's reluctant, as you see in the film, he's reluctant to engage in the Civil Rights Movement. It takes forces. It takes the Harry Belafonte's. It takes the Sidney Poitier's. It takes the Ossie Davis's. It takes the Ruby Dee's. And it takes Dr. King to persuade Sammy to get involved, you know. So, you know, he wasn't like Harry Belafonte, who knew he wanted to be on the front lines of the Civil Rights Movement. Sammy was a reluctant, you know, person to get engaged in the movement, you know. And that was always his approach. He was reluctant. But when he did stand up and come to the fore, he had a point to make, a social point and a political point. Now, the other thing to remember there, though, David, that all the things he said sometimes rubbed the wrong way with the rest of the black community. I mean, him going to Vietnam when there was, you know, people were anti-Vietnam was something that rankled people the wrong way. Him supporting Richard Nixon in 1971 for the 72 was also something that rankled the, you know, the community. And Sammy had to deal with it. He had to face it. He had to confront it, as you see, when he went to Operation Push to perform, and the audience initially booed him. They booed
him. That's right.
This great entertainer. And he's up there, you know, vulnerable. This is the thing you remember about Sammy Davis Jr.
Well, Sam, the beautiful line is, I wrote it down, you might disagree with my politics, but I will not allow anyone to take away the fact that I'm black.
That's
is
right.
What he said at Operation Pushback.
He was still a black man. You may not agree with him, but you had to accept that he had a point of view. You may not agree, but it was his point of view, you know. And he's amazing. He's an amazing, very interesting human being. The thing to remember, you know, most of us are very complicated human beings. The difference is that Sammy was front and center for many people to see all the time. He was always out there. Most performers, most celebrities preferred not to get politically involved. When they do, sometimes they have to get the pushback. You know, you saw that with Meryl Streep when she was at the Golden Globes.
Sure.
You know, you see that with Alec Baldwin imitating Trump. People get pushback. Now, I have to give it to Sammy for being courageous enough to stand up and present himself politically, you know, to the American audience at that time, knowing that he could get pushback.
Well, it makes you wonder, too, you know, his reluctance to get involved as an activist, and you so sort of set that out so well biographically, you know, these different chapters in his life and just how multi-talented he really was. I mean, he what was the line? Jack of all trades and master of all.
Right.
Yeah, he was.
Think of it this way. Here, he could sing. Yeah. He's a phenomenal dancer. You know, he could play the piano. He could play the vibraphones. He could play the trumpet. He could play the bass. This guy was a great singer. This guy was a phenomenal, phenomenal impressionist. He had it all. He really had it all.
Well, it kind of makes me wonder what his life would have been like had he got into politics.
Who knows? You know, he could have probably made some kind of dent, some kind of change, but you never know. I mean, I'm not sure he was a man to be in politics, really. He's not, you know, I would say this, David. I don't think he's like a Harry Belafonte, who was always upfront and center about his politics and where he stood from when he started, met Dr. King in the 50s, even to the present day. Sammy was a little more wishy, like most people, really.
Right. You know? Well, absolutely right. And this is what I think is so beautiful about the film, Sam. And by the way, I don't think I've said it on tape here. Congratulations again. I was so engrossed right from the get-go. And a dear friend of mine who passed away about 10 years, I couldn't help but think of him. He grew up in vaudeville, a ventriloquist. And I mean, I was sitting with him. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he played some of the same clubs. His name was Gene Sneed, and I couldn't help but just smile on behalf of Gene as I was watching this film. You know, the commentary, the racial commentary, what's happening in the U.S. right now, you know, the lines that Sammy not only crossed, but the ways he was trying to bring people together, the kiss on All in the Family, marrying a white woman, breaking down barriers. Michael Jackson refers to him in song as a door. He opened doors to others. He tells the story about going into the army and knocking a guy down. And he says, yeah, you know, and the guy who he knocks over, he gives him two, I think he uses the phrase, he gave him a couple of Sundays. He got a couple of good punches in, knocks him down. And the guy says, yeah, you know what? You beat me, but you're still a black man.
Still a nigger. He says, still a nigger.
Thank you. So, you're yeah. And then Sammy goes on to say, even if you win, you don't win.
Right.
Is that kind of where we're at today?
Well, you know, The issue of race in America, David, is never going to go away. I mean, it's in the DNA of this country with slavery. You know, it's a part of who we are. And you try, you know, the struggle to for equality and struggle for acceptance has never subsided. I mean, it's changed. It's a better America than it was when my mother and father grew up in the 40s and the 50s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and when Sammy grew up. But as you could see in Charlottesville, up in, from Toronto, there's still lots of hate, lots of resentment, lots of anger, because we live in a world, and this is not just in America, but we live in a world where people need to always feel that they are better than someone else to make them feel better. You know that. I mean, why do we have all these wars everywhere? It's this constant need for people to say, I'm better than you. I live better than you. I can be better than you. You know, you should not be my equal. And sadly, this is a struggle that we will continually have to fight in America. I would like to have thought that by the time we got to the 21st century, that things would change. But sadly, it hasn't changed completely, you know. And in some ways, you know, David, the election of Barack Obama as president sort of took the cover off some stuff that we thought had been, that had gone. It was just dormant. And when Obama became president, it's like someone said to me at the Sundance Film Festival around the first term of Obama, said, she said, I think we live in a post-racial society. And I said, I don't think so. And it's clear that we don't. Just look at Charlottesville. Just look at what Trump says. We don't live in a post-racial society. The issue of race is going to be dogging America probably till, like all empires, it falls.
I was watching Trevor Noah last night with my wife. Elizabeth and I were kind of religious watchers. We're big fans. And Brian Johnston of the Equal Justice Initiative was on, and he said that we're never going to get to that place, to maybe that post-racial place. I'm not even sure what that means exactly. But anyway, we're never going to get there unless we are able to talk about these issues, actually get them on the table in a way that it seems like we're not willing to do.
Because it makes people uncomfortable. It's like people saying, it's like listening to people on the, in the media and people saying, well, Trump is not a racist. You know, they don't want to speak to the fact that he is, you know. Oh, no, he's not a racist. Well, then you have to ask the next question. Well, how do you define what a racist is and what a racist is not? That's the dialogue you need to have. I mean, is sometimes the people politically incorrect because of the way they were brought up, or is it, or is something else going on inside of them? Trump talks about the fact that there was equal size of people who were you know, causing problems on the left and the right. But you think back to the Central Park Five and how Trump dealt with that and calling these young men thugs and criminals and stuff, because he was raised to perceive us, perceive black people in a certain way. Now, my family grew up in the South. Now, some white Southerners, they don't think of themselves as racist, but they see themselves as saying, I am different than you. I'm better than you. Some don't see that. But, you know, so it becomes, you're right, it's about having a conversation. And sometimes it's a difficult conversation, but it's one that needs to be had.
So is that what somebody who sees your new film, are they going to just walk out of the theater going, wow, what an incredible entertainer? You know, as Billy Crystal said, this is a genius. This, you know, this is something that's not taught. I mean, I loved what Billy Crystal said, by the way, about Sammy and about how his talent just kind of just, it was a part of, and Whoopi, I think, as well, just it was a part of who he was.
Yeah.
We'd have to talk a little bit more about what it means that it's just a part of your DNA. I mean, clearly, I think it was more than that with Sammy, myself, from what I saw in the film. But what's the average viewer going to walk away with? Is this the kind of story that's going to sit with them, that's going to fester a little, Sam?
I think it's one of these kind of films that there'll be some people in the audience that will walk away saying, wow, I forgot how great an entertainer he was. And there'll be some people who will come out of the theater who will say, wow, he's a great entertainer, but man, what a life, what a complicated life he had, struggling with, you know, his feelings about Kim Novak and marrying My Brit, you know, and being uninvited to the Kennedy inauguration gala, you know, and having to deal with being a member of the Rat Pack and the reaction to the community, from the community when he hugged Nixon. This guy's life was very complicated. He was a man who didn't understand about how to deal and handle money, you know, who spent money like it was turning on the faucet. So you're going to see so many facets of Sammy's life that you'll come away either saying he was a great entertainer and that's enough, or you'll say he was a great entertainer, but boy, was he a complicated human being. And that's what I hope the latter happens. I hope there's more of the latter.
Well, I mean, and in truth, I mean, we've already talked about it, but we're all walking contradictions. I mean, it's paradox, right? Paradox, contradiction, exactly. Complexity.
Exactly. That's all we all are. The difference is that he's on a bigger canvas than most of us.
Bigger canvas. But what's interesting about him is, I mean, he took these obstacles, and instead of what you would think a superficial entertainer would be, and I don't consider him to be that at all, by the way, and right. Thank you for providing that insight into his life, but he kind of took these things head on. I can't help but be struck by the moment where he was in Golden Boy and the kiss on stage, and he says, are you ready for the aftermath of that's what's right. going to happen, this black man and this white woman first time on stage kissing, yeah. and he does it anyway.
Yeah. You know, not to say that he wasn't frightened, but he knew right. I had to do it. He had to do it. You know, he always had to do it. I mean, he felt he had to break barriers, knowing the consequences, knowing the fears, knowing the backlash he would get. But he felt he had a right to do those things, and he should have had a right, like any human being.
Well, see, this is what makes him an interesting entertainer to me, Sam, because he's not just working for the paycheck at that point.
Oh.
He's actually subverting. I mean, he's doing more than subverting. He's running into controversy. He's running into political dialogue. He's running into issues head on stage, on camera. And somebody in the film said that he illuminated the truth in his singing, which I thought was brilliant.
Right. No, listen, here is a man who was at the top of his game by the early 60s, and he felt he could voice who he was and what he felt and how he looked at life, you know? And that comes from a sense of, I have reached this pinnacle in my career, and I can do that. Now, he had to deal with the brickbats, but he was able to withstand them.
Did he struggle with a spirituality? I mean, obviously he converts to Judaism later in life, and he said at one point, you put in so what I thought was wise in the film, you know, I was shopping for something to believe in. It sounded like he came out of a family of a faith tradition, and then he kind of...
Yeah, he came out of a family with whatever, Christians. I don't know if they were, you know, every Sunday went to church, but they were Christians. And obviously, as a man who was sort of struggling with who he was and where he was and who he should be, he was looking for a connection. That seems pretty normal to me. And so when he found a Jewish religion, that was something that he felt a connection to. He felt the connection. And it also probably had to do with that. Listen, he grew up in the entertainment industry, that there were a lot of great Jewish performers and entertainers who he interacted with. You know, and he got to like them, admire them, and he understood them. And he obviously felt there was some connection to who they were spiritually and from a religious perspective that attracted to him, that was attractive to him. You know, meeting Eddie Cantor, knowing Jerry Lewis, all of these guys. So that's what made him decide he wanted to embrace the Jewish religion, Judaism.
So there's... We're probably going to have to wrap it up here in a few minutes, I guess, Sam. And I this is the kind of conversation I want to go on all day, personally. But why do you think, and I think you touch on it in the film, but why does the Rat Pack embrace Sammy Davis Jr.? Why do they bring him in? And somebody in the film says, you know, the Rat Pack gave the illusion that America was integrating at the time in the 60s, when in actual fact that wasn't the case at all.
Wasn't the case, but think of it this way. He idolized Frank Sinatra. In the early 40s, Frank Sinatra takes a liking to him because, you know, Sinatra was an underdog. He loved underdogs, no matter what color they were, you know, so he became sort of someone who wanted to help Sammy Davis Jr. So as his career evolved, he felt like he wanted to pull Sammy along with him. At the same time, there's Dean Martin, there's Joey Bishop, all these different guys, you know, doing their different things, and they come together. So it's sort of like Frank says, you know, listen, I made it. There should be room for someone like Sammy Davis Jr., who is a phenomenal talent. Frank saw his talent. Frank realized he was a great talent. And so he embraced him. Now, you know and I know that we don't get into as much. That relationship between Sammy and Frank was complicated, too. It wasn't all lollipops and ice cream, you know. But, again, these are two human beings who are competitive and got egos, and so they're struggling with who wants to be the top dog. Now, Frank was the top dog, and anytime Sammy tried to step out of that place, you know, Frank smacked him down, which has been documented, so.
Right, right. I think it's a wonderful little bit of business in the film when, I mean, he's quite the impressionist. And again, another barrier, another line that he steps across when he starts to impersonate white people, Humphrey Bogart, and so on. No, and his father tells him, you better not do that again or I'm going to kill you.
Yes, yeah, because think of it this way. Back in the 40s, no black entertainers were doing that, David. No one was imitating Jimmy Cagney and Everett G. Robinson and Jimmy Stewart and Cary Grant and Dean. Nobody was doing that. No black entertainers was doing that. Sammy was breaking barriers because he just felt good. He was good at it and he wanted to do it, you know. Sometimes he was just doing these things because he says, I should be able to do it, knowing that, he's overstepping the norm, which makes him a barrier breaker.
Absolutely. What I love is the irony that here he has to impersonate somebody else, a white man. He has to impersonate a white man in order to push back, to challenge the status quo. So in other words, he has to be fake in order to get to the truth. It's beautiful.
Exactly.
It's a beautiful irony.
That's right. It is a beautiful irony. Beautiful irony.
It really is. It's just such a wonderful film. It made me smile. It challenged my own thinking about celebrity and about politics and about, I mean, the whole piece, the whole bit on Kennedy and how the Democrats sort of pushed Sammy away is truly remarkable. It's a commentary on partisanship. This film is about inclusion. It's about relationships. It's about going a little bit deeper. I can't believe that Sammy was picketed by Nazis, as you say in the film, and here we are, what, not even 6 weeks ago,
that's
watching
right.
some of this very same thing
same
play
thing
out
happened.
In the U.S.
Same thing happened. So, you know, I hope that this film touches people not only from a historical perspective, but from a contemporary one also.
Yeah. Sam, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. Sam Pollard talking about Sammy Davis Jr., I Gotta Be Me, his new film coming up at the Toronto International Film Festival very soon. Sam, I hope we do actually get to meet. And
I hope you come to the premiere. If you can.
I hope I can make it. I definitely will.
It's Monday night, September 11th, 9:45. So try
Thanks
to meet
again,
you. Thank you again, David.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.